Welcome to our podcast, Up on Foil, where we talk all about foiling. This is episode 31, and if you've been following the podcast for any period of time, you know that usually Matt is starting the episode. But this time, because I'm a bit of a fanboy, I'm going to start the episode because we brought Dave West. He's a terrific foiler from Australia. He's getting into parawinging with some struggles. The reason why I started watching his videos is because he literally dog started at his first trial. So since that time, he's like my idol. Did I forget anything? Do you have anything to add? Welcome, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Gail. I did dog start my first attempt, but I did know how to prone surf already. So it's not really fair. Seeing people learn dog starting from scratch, I'm like, that's very impressive because it's so hard when you're trying to learn to jump on a board, then trying to learn to foil after that. So kudos to you if that's, because it seems that that's the way you did it. Is that right?
Yeah. And pretty much also, yeah, Matt was into wing foiling, but yeah, pretty steep progression.
So you're actually the man. You're the man.
No, lots of people in Switzerland are getting into the same struggle. And how was for you? How was your journey? You started with wing foiling first, right?
I think I did winging and prone at about the same time. I definitely started, and I shouldn't call it prone. It should be called surf foiling. I started surf foiling behind a jet ski first. So I had a friend who was kind enough to teach me, and that like gives you so much of an advantage learning behind a jet ski because you can learn to ride the foil first. And so I did that and I got into the waves and would just get ejected all the time. You paddle in and just boof, and you'd explode out the back of the wave. And at the same time, I started winging as well. So I sort of started both at the same time. And one of the classic stories, because of COVID, I had heaps of time on my hands. My job essentially shut down and I was still getting paid. So I was like, sweet, it's like a paid holiday. Yeah. And so I just foiled 3-4 hours every single day. And and I sort of, it's only in the last 6 months that I've actually slowed down a little bit on foiling. So, and then.
What is that?
Oh, I think because I'm at the close to the 4-year mark. And I never thought this would happen. You get fussy. So especially surf foiling, I'm more and more fussy about the waves that I want to be foiling on, because just an unbroken wave now for me is kind of boring, which I never thought would happen. I remember my first wave being like, this is amazing. And I still remember that feeling, but it does change because I think I want different things out of surf foiling now. I want to be progressing. And I feel like if I'm just going on an unbroken wave, there's only so much I can do that I haven't done now 1,000 times. So I'm just getting pickier with conditions. And I want a pocket now. It's becoming so much like surfing. I want a broken part of the wave that I can hit. And that means there can't be surfers around because we're flying past at 30 kilometers
an
hour.
That's impossible.
Yeah. So without the tow boogie or like 4-wheel drive, it's so limiting. And so it's just getting harder to find the conditions that I want.
I've seen you with the tow boogie in one of your latest videos, I think.
Mm.
That seems amazing. Does that work as well as in the ads?
No. So there's it like the tow, and Mark won't mind me saying this. Mark is the inventor of the tow boogie, and he's absolute genius. Like, there are good sides to the tow boogie and there are bad sides. And some days you're like out in the water trying to get it to connect and come back to you, and it's like 250 meters away and you got too greedy on a wave and didn't keep track of it. That stuff is all part of it. But then there is absolutely, like, when you figure out how to use it, and you do need to be a reasonably good foiler to sort of get the best out of a tow boogie. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I can ride my normal prone setup and still link waves and leave it out the back. But then you also, there are people that are not using them responsibly. And And Mark is trying to make ways that people can't use them in certain places. So he's done like geofencing. So if there's a lot of Strava usage in a certain geographical area, he limits how much the boogie can follow you, which essentially means, which is the way I use it, is I whip myself in and then I actually just leave the tow boogie at the back. And then it's on me to pump back out to the boogie. That's the way I use it. And I personally think that's the best way to use it, because then you can use it in a lot of different places. But it is amazing. Like, there's no doubt, like, my foiling increased so much because of that, because I could just catch so many waves on my normal prone setup. And any of those assists do progress you. They are a cheat code. They're an expensive cheat code. So,
and how about compared to the foil drive?
For me, it's like a longboard versus shortboard. That's sort of the way I look at it. The tow boogie allows me to ride like a shortboard, in the sense that I can ride a smaller foil. I'm on a lighter setup. And the way I personally try and ride on a foil drive is more flowy, more like a longboard. But they have their pros and cons. Like, a foil drive is more simple in a sense, because it's attached to you. You can just motor out through a big lineup. Whereas, say, a tow boogie on a big day, you have to get the tow boogie out the back first, then swim out to it. Whereas, say, a foil drive, you don't have to do that. You can't really downwind with the tow boogie. People are doing it, but not really doing it. Like, the tow boogie, that it doesn't like to run into steep chop. And so the better the bumps are, the worse the boogie behaves. He is working on that, but it's like, you're not really downwinding because you're worried about where the boogie is. You don't want to lose your $10,000 boogie. Whereas, say, a four drive, for me, if you were going to downwind, absolutely, you're going to use the four drive. So one's a little more versatile, one's a little more pure in the experience. And to me, they're a totally different offering. That's why I use both. That's why I have both. And it's why I work with both brands. Like, they're both fantastic options for people. Foil drive for me is more on the beginner end. It's so good for beginners. It's amazing.
It's so easy.
And then, yeah, and I would probably move the scale then to, the more advanced you get, the more you should lean towards a tow boogie, depending on where you live and other factors. But yeah, they're both incredible. Like,
how often are you on the water, Dave?
Pretty much every day. I do. Well, like, our winter is, you know, 25 degrees. So it's not cold here really ever. I never wear a wetsuit all year, but the only days I'm not on the water is if it's like work related or family related. It's really the only reason. And my lifestyle is pretty relaxed for the most part. But yeah. I'd say six out of seven days.
I guess that we remember that you made that video, like, I quit my job for foiling, sort of. Is that still the same?
It is. So, and I can't remember what I said in that video. It was definitely like a bit of a clickbait title. Because I think in it I said, like, no, that's not, I've quit my job.
You said it in the first minute when you started the video. Yeah.
That was such a cliche thing to do on YouTube at that time. And it did, like, it got bugger all views, so it didn't work. But I'm just going to turn my aircon on. That's how hot it is here.
For you.
So I'm a wedding singer by trade. I'm a DJ and a wedding singer. So you get paid really well for one day a week. So I sort of work one or two days a week usually, and then other bits and pieces, you know, other side of that. But I'm actually trying. So yes, technically I'm a semi-professional foiler, because I make money off foiling. And then I'm a professional musician. That's sort of what I am. And it's allowed me to do what I do, plus have three children as well.
Three.
Because, yeah, otherwise there's no chance that you would either be a really bad dad or you'd be a great foiler. And I sort of get to do all of them, and still be around for the kids while they're really young, and provide for the kids. 7, 5, and 3.
Okay. Yeah, that's challenging. But it's start to get fun with the kids as well there. Yeah. You need to get on the water as well.
Yeah, I'm dabbling with the idea of taking the oldest on the foil drive. So she boogie boards, she doesn't surf or anything, but I'm thinking about sticking her on a big board and a foil drive and just seeing if she can motor and just keep it on the water. And
have you winged with her?
No, I think because I'm heavy and we don't get that much wind.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's already enough just to get me off the water that add a 30-kilo child in.
All right.
I'm a little bit nervous about that.
How do you make money out of foiling?
So I get brand. I don't get like, and there's not a lot of people that do. I get commission on board sales on a cipher. So if you buy a cipher, because I helped develop that board, I get like a little bit of a kickback. It's not much, but I'm so appreciative of it because I then use that money. Really, I don't make any money because I use that money to then go on trips. Yeah. And every Saturday that I'm not working costs me money. So like I'm going to Barcelona for the Foil Fest, the Barcelona, I can't remember what it's called now.
Yeah.
You know, the thing. Yeah. And like that's costing me money because I had to keep that weekend open during peak wedding season. So it actually cost me a lot of money, but the money I do make, I just reinvest. So board sales, coaching, hiring out a foil drive, bits and pieces. So it's I don't mind telling people this sort of stuff. It's probably like $30,000 a year, which really, as a family of five, does nothing. Like that, you know,
in Australia especially.
Yeah, that's like your grocery bill for the year, maybe. Probably not even enough. Like, so
do you look at foiling as a job now, or is it just it doesn't matter because you like to do it anyway?
It's sort of both. I'm careful because I've made, so say music is absolutely my job, and I know what it's like to turn a hobby into a job, and you do lose the passion. There's no doubt that it changes. I still play guitar for enjoyment and bits and pieces, but you're not drawn to it in the same way that you would be. So I'm actually trying to be careful that I don't make it too much of a job. Because even like I did the foil drive camp a couple of weeks ago, and that was 4 days of nonstop foiling, nonstop foil talk and shimming and foot positioning. Like it was full on 16 hours a day. I didn't want to foil all week after that. And that's just like, it's the same thing that happens with weddings. I sing for 5 hours at a wedding. I don't want to sing during the week. So I don't want it to necessarily become a job because foiling is my escape. It's the thing that I enjoy, and I'm sort of trying to be careful that I keep it. So say, and Josh Koo's an example, because Josh is turning, and I don't think I'm saying anything that he would be upset by. Like he's turning foiling into a job, a career. He's going to be one of the few absolutely, like probably in the next 6 months, his entire income will be from foiling. But you can even see it affects how often he can upload on YouTube because he's making videos for Foil Drive. He's making videos for Code. He's making content for Amos. And it takes away from some of your creative energy. And then there's also like, well, why shouldn't I get paid if I'm going to do that? So then you do have to be more motivated by money. So I'm actually sort of happy with where it's at. And I wouldn't, you know, I just love for trips to be sort of covered. I really just don't want it to cost my family any money in that sense. That's the goal. It sort of be a free hobby is amazing, which for the most part it is now. So
especially considering how expensive it is.
Yeah, it's not cheap. Like before I was sponsored, I was spending so much money on foiling gear. Like I had it. Part of the reason I originally got in with Axis was because I bought so much Axis gear. I had two jobs at the time and I was buying everything. Like I had about 15 foils and used two of them.
Always said, no, I'm not going to sell it because I might use it later.
Exactly. There'll be one day. And it was funny, the shop that I used to buy everything through, when they heard that Adrian wanted to put me on the team, they got upset because they were like, this is our best customer. So yes, these things happen.
And how did your YouTube journey started? Because, of course, you know, when you get passionate about someone, you just go scroll through the feed and watch the first videos. And I noticed that you are into spearfishing, which, by the way, I love as well.
But, oh, awesome.
Yeah. What was your goal when you started? Were you just sharing your tips with Winfoiling?
I think it sort of actually goes back a long time. I've been doing YouTube for a long time. I was starting to realize, I was like, man, I've been doing this since I was about 16 years old and I'm 35 now. But every time I have a chapter in my life where I become obsessed with something, I make a YouTube channel about it. And I have since deleted those YouTube channels so nobody can go back and find them. So I've always loved YouTube. Like, I think as a platform, it's amazing that random people like us can just make content for people. And I think that's the new media. Like there's nobody cares about celebrities anymore. They want their YouTube friends. That's who they care about. I'm exactly like that. And so it made sense for me. I had a background in video production from a work perspective as well. And I had actually bought all this really expensive wedding video gear to transition out of music into videography for weddings. And that was right when COVID hit. And so I couldn't get any jobs because weddings got shut down with COVID. So I was like, well, what am I going to do? I've spent I had $30,000 in really top end camera gear. And so I just started making YouTube videos to justify the expense and to make sure. So it was a tax write off, which was great. And it just went from there. People resonated with how honest I was and how much I swear in videos, I think. And it's sort of my MO, and I've wanted that to change as I've gotten better. And it was interesting putting up that Parawing video, because it's probably the first video I've done like that since my downwind journey, which is almost 2 years ago. Well, feels like 2 years ago. And I got like a lot of friends sort of in the background going like, hey, man, that was a bit negative. And I was like, oh, I thought that was my MO. Like, but I was a little bit too honest maybe, but
that's important. That's super important, man.
Yeah.
And literally an hour ago, we talked to Foilrat. You know him for sure. And he told us.
I think I upset Foilrat. Right?
Yeah, exactly. He told us, tell Dave West to not swear on parawinging.
He loves parawinging. And I think I just, like, he was going to have me on his podcast. And then he hasn't invited me back since that video. And I'm like, I know why. Because I'm going to be on there and be like, ah, fuck this. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
No, you're allowed to. Sorry if I'm sometimes I fall. I'm on a balance board right now. Sometimes I have to get back up. Let's talk parawing for a second. How is it since your last video? How's it going? You're a bigger, heavier guy, so that's more difficult for you, obviously. How's it going?
Look, I think there's a set of conditions that parawing is not ideal for, and I happen to live in a place that has exactly that all the time. So light winds under 15 knots is regular for us. I often downwind in 12 knots all the time. Like, and I mean, I reckon 50% of my downwinding is in under 15 knots. And so that plus I'm heavier, that doesn't help. But also because I can paddle, I was thinking about this the other day, and I need to make a follow-up video so people don't think I hate parawing. It's that my context is a little bit different to, say, someone like Daniel's, because he lives in a bay. And so downwind logistics are really tricky for people in Melbourne. They have to go all the way around the bay, and then they sort of have to cut out and then come back to where they want to go. So parawing's perfect for him. They also get really good wind in summer, whereas summer's our down season. That's actually where our wind gets quite bad. So he's, you know, regularly going out 18 to 20 knots, whereas I'm going regularly out in 12 to 15 knots. So for me, the paddle is a much better tool just in general. And the other thing is that I can paddle up a small board. Like, I've gotten good enough at downwinding that a 7-foot board I can still make work. It, like, I went on a run yesterday in like 12 knots on a 980S on a 7'4" board at 95 kilos, which is exactly what I've been wanting to power wing on. So it's like I can get that up in almost no wind. So it's just that there's a unique set of circumstances that I have and my abilities are stronger in a certain direction, which makes it, I just have less incentive.
Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking about. Like when I was learning to downwind and struggling, like on SUP paddle, there was no way.
Did you struggle?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Have you not seen the video?
Good. No, I haven't seen this one. No.
That's like my most popular video. Like it's the one that resonated with everybody because it was just like, it's hard. It's the hurt locker for a good.
But it's a gold standard. If you know how to do that, then you've done it. Then you're good to go.
It will make you the best foiler in every regard, like learning to sup downwind, just downward, excuse me, in general, makes you a better foiler.
Would you say that paringing is harder?
No, even close. Not even close. I would more compare it to like, it's harder than winging. Like yeah, it's harder definitely. Than learning to wing. Yeah. Less stability, more annoying. Like it's just annoying. Yeah. Like crashing with a wing is not a big deal. Crashing with a power wing can be a 5-minute ordeal. And I'm just stuck at the, I can jibe and tack sometimes and I don't know why I don't know how to and I don't know why I can. So I'm still like, I've been watching my own footage in slow-mo, like what did I do? And I have no idea. And if I could just tack and jibe, I'd actually be fine. I probably would enjoy it. But at the moment, it's like 50-50 chance that I'll crash and run into this jellyfish thing in front of me. And
it can be dangerous. I mean, these lines, if you fall into them, I suppose that the thumbnail was staged where you had it all over you. No,
not at all.
Wow.
If you watch the video, you can hear my full reaction because I tried to jar, whatever it is, tack, whatever. And you can see it come over my head and it landed on top of my head. And I was like, because I said to myself, if I fall in head first, I'm going to get all wrapped up. And so I was like, okay, just stay on foil and just slowly come down and do that like plop. And that's what I managed to do. And that's why I wasn't like in the water wrapped in it. And I've got the whole footage. Like, it was a great thumbnail, I must say.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of my best thumbnails ever. But yeah, that genuinely happened. And if you watch it, you can hear the audio of me just going like, what the fuck is going on here? Cause I didn't know that was possible. I hadn't even experienced that. So
yes, it definitely can be a pain, but I'm still at the beginning of SUP downwinding. I've made like 5 tries. But the problem with me is I don't go on the water every day. So like from these 5 tries were over a span of maybe 4 months because no conditions, no time. And then it's really hard to improve.
Yep.
Oh, the power wing is just poop. And if there's enough wind, you go.
You've got pretty good wind though in Switzerland. Dying.
During winter times, yes. Last year we had an incredible summer with lots of nice winds during summer as well. But we have this lake, which is perfectly angled towards the wind. So if we have northeasterly or southwesterly winds, it's like maybe 25-kilometer lake, and you get some swell there as well. And then you don't even need a shuttle; you can go on a train. And sometimes we're 7-8 downwinders, some with paddle, some with power wings on the train next to people in suits.
Amazing. That'd be amazing. Well, and that I think for learning to parawing, for me, it's not a question of getting up on foil. It's getting upwind on foil. And or otherwise, I have no real incentive to learn to parawing because I already have a system of downwinding. Like we have a great straight coastline, all beach, and I have buddies that always want to go. So the idea of just parawing just to get up and get going isn't really on my list of things to do. It's more that I want to use it to cut up wind or cut out to sea to get a better angle on the bumps. So I need performance on foil from the power wing and low end because I'm heavy and the conditions are light. So I'm probably one of those cases. I'm asking a lot of a power wing at their current technology.
Stage of development, yeah.
Yeah. And so flow I've been chatting with Flo, and we're trying to work on that specific problem. Light winds, heavy rider, doesn't want to ride a giant foil. I'm fussy. I'm a hard customer in that sense. They're like, I regularly downwind on a 770 in light winds. So at 95 kilos. And so, you know, I don't want to be on a big 1130S or something like that. That's big for me now. So it's a hard sell, but I'm realizing now that I'm at a stage of foiling and sponsorships where you actually are willing to give negative feedback in a constructive way. And I wasn't like that at the beginning. I'd get any piece of gear and be like, this thing's the best. Like, they'd be like, any feedback? Nah, that's good, man. Whereas now I will nitpick, because you need people to do that sort of thing.
Yeah,
to
make, obviously, that makes forward. Sense for the producer as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I would imagine you now reviewing again the 1300 from Axis.
Oh, that was a great foil, the 1300. I love that thing.
Certainly, yeah, why not?
I have a lot to thank for that foil. That was my breakthrough foil for downwinding, for sure.
Yeah, and actually your video plus Dominic Hoskins' videos were the reason why I got that foil, which was the foil that got me on foil. So thank you for awesome. That as well.
So you've been learning to sub downwind? Because I think I've seen you a dock start to downwind.
Sort of like, yeah, but very short, because I am absolutely crap at reading the bumps. I don't know how to stay on the wave. I don't know how to use the energy of the wave. And actually, I remember in one of your latest YouTube videos, it's like just an aesthetic type of cinematic footage. And then in the description, you say that surf foiling, like prone foiling, is still your favorite. And then you mentioned how important it is to use the energy of the wave and not pump around all the time when you get out of the wave. And what tips have you got for that? And would you say that every wave have energy to use?
Yeah.
Sense.
So, and unfortunately, this is something you can't really teach online, in the sense that I've been thinking about how do I deliver this information to people in a way that will be useful for them. Because when you're downwinding and you learn to downwind and read bumps, you have so much incentive to not fall off foil that you, and just time on foil, that you will find energy and you will learn to find it. And that does translate into your surf foiling. And I think that was probably what I was probably trying to say. And my tip is that, like, if you think you're on a wave and you find yourself pumping, why are you pumping? Because it was one of the best takeaways for one of my students from the foil drive camp. Was I would show him footage of himself on the wave pumping. And what it was is, so there's like the top of the wave, there's the middle, and there's the bottom. And he's near the bottom. So he's having to pump, but he thinks he's on the wave. But you're not on the wave. You're actually in front of it. And it's the worst place to be. It's like an uphill. It feels like an uphill on the foil. And so you always want to be getting up into the top of the energy. And obviously gravity is going to work for you. And that is, it's about trusting your foil, trusting the bottom end of your foil, and knowing your setup. Because so many people change and they shim and they change tail. And I always encourage people, stay on a foil for 3 months. Do not change foil for that discipline for 3 months. Make it work in the conditions you can. And you'll just learn what it can do, where it's going to take you, because there's so much energy on offer. Like, and I'm probably evidence of that. I'm heavy. I ride small foils in small surf. Like, a lot of the clips I've been putting up lately, it's an 800 foil. And that's my normal prone foil. And it's probably 1 foot. And it's all relative. Some people think that's huge. Some people think that's tiny. You know, everybody lives in different places. But working the foil through the power zones, so up to the top, down to the bottom, back up to the top, is the most important thing. And if you ever find yourself just pumping, but you're like, I'm on the wave, why am I pumping? You're doing it wrong. And there is energy behind you. So, and sometimes just slowing down, stop pumping, can be the answer. So
I'm always scared that the wave, if I'm on top of the wave, that it will pass and then I'm in that hole. That won't happen.
It's more likely that you'll shoot down it. So that's what happens to people sometimes. They don't know how to do a bottom turn yet, and you shoot down it, and then they don't know what to do. And the answer is obviously to turn back into it and let yourself shave off speed. But then it's about traversing when you need to. So if you're not at the point where you can do a really hard bottom turn, or it depends on the foil you're on too. Like you ride differently on different foils. But say it's a big foil, you need to traverse more. And so if you cut across the top of the wave, then you'll be staying in that power zone to make sure that, you don't just shoot down the front of it. And that's the same for downwinding. You always want to be in a high point. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, I love. Yeah, I mean, I completely resonate on the bad example that you're giving, like pumping on the wave and then not understanding why the wave is not pushing you. And when you say bottom, middle, and like top, that's like the ramp of the wave, I guess. But I imagine that it also matters how high you are on the mast on the wave, because the power is again on top, right?
Yeah, a mast height is one of them. This becomes really apparent when people have a foil drive because they dip their pods. So it's really obvious to tell them, like, hey, you're riding way too low. But most of us ride with probably only 20 centimeters of a mast popping out the majority of the time. That's what.
51st.
Yeah. And it's, this is my like running joke with foil size is how to make a big foil go faster, ride higher. It's you've got all this drag from the mast and you're more worried about going from a 850 foil to a 800 foil, but you've got 60 centimeters of foil of mast in the water that you don't potentially need. And that's why I can make small foils work, because you're making the foil work more efficiently. And you do need to get low on the mast sometimes. Sometimes you need to shave off speed. Like when I do a bottom turn, I want to shave off speed. I can't do a sharp bottom turn going fast. Like the best prone surfing happens going slow. That's where all the good prone surfing is. You watch Adam Bennett's, I learned this from him. Like he fades into the wrong way. So if the wave's going right, he will fade left to slow down because foils cover so much ground so quickly, to then come around and be in line to hit the peak of the wave. And that's one of the things you'll learn to do, is you actually like go to where it looks like you shouldn't go to get to where you do want to go. And it's all about, mast height management to go fast or slow.
Also the breaching the tips part that comes into play when you do sharp turns on the bottom, that the angle is better. I just watched that video. I don't know how many videos of you I watched yesterday. Probably 20.
Well, and that, I think that video is pretty old, and I was on the ARTs, and nobody's going to be surprised that the ARTs were terrible at breaching. That was like one of their defining characteristics. You breach the tiniest wingtip, poof, the whole thing would just drop. And so I learned to breach on an ART by just pushing it as hard as you possibly could. And then I made a video thinking like I'd figured something out. But I think now it's just foil design. Like,
all right,
I'm on a foil now, which is, it's a prototype. A lot of the videos you see of me lately is a prototype that will come out whenever it comes out with code. And it just breaches so well. Like, it's insane. And to me, doesn't matter what brand you choose, I think breachability is like the number one thing I look for in a foil, because that just means you stay on foil for longer. Because you can get away with murder, and then you don't have to worry so much. So you'll see I do bottom turns and my backside wingtip pops out, and normally that's game over, absolutely game over. So I think the right foils just make the biggest difference.
What do you ride at the moment? You said 880?
I can't give you too many details, but it's about 800, close to 800. And it's very thin, it's very surfy, and it's a lot like the S series from Code. I liken it to the 720S because it's got the same speed and it's got similar turnability, but it has better pumping, especially for my weight. So say the 720, I can pump pretty easily, but this 800 size wing is like just a little bit more low end for my weight, that it means I just catch more waves if I'm paddling or on the boogie. It doesn't matter. I use it for everything. And that's pretty much my go-to foil at the moment.
And this is for prone foiling. And then for downwinding, I guess you have a wider range of foils.
Yeah, generally 770 or 860. They're my two like go-tos. And occasionally the 680. I have found that the 680 is like diminishing returns in size. It has to be pretty huge conditions to justify the 680. Because like you say, your average speed is 26, 27 kilometers on those other two foils. On the 680, you need to be averaging about 30 kilometers an hour. So it means there needs to be a big underlying swell and wind. So it needs to be like great conditions. But let's like the 680 this year in Hawaii, I reckon I'll use the 680 a lot because last year I used the 770 a lot and I've gotten better since then. So I'd love to see how fast I can get that 680 to go. But yeah, it's just easier to make mistakes. The smaller your foil, so easy to make mistakes. And so it's just, and one mistake in a race is a lifetime. It's like if you're down for 30 seconds, you've lost the race.
Everyone flies by.
Because yeah. The other ones cover so much distance in that same amount of time.
I think was it Gwen or was it Jonas who said that he was in Kozel at the race and there was basically no waves at all. So it was just flat water paddle ups. And then they always one pass that they couldn't pump anymore. So they stopped and then got passed again and they passed. So it was always just like.
Yeah, that was Gwen. Yeah.
That'd be horrible. Well, and I remember we finished a run the other day and I fell on the run and we came into the beach and the boys were just like taking the piss out of me. They're just like, mate, we don't fall anymore. And I was like, it's true. Because the guys I downwind are better than me and it annoys the crap out of me. But people just aren't falling anymore. They're not making mistakes.
But, and, you know, that really depends how hard you turn.
Well, they're not turning because they're racing. Yeah. I should say this isn't a race scenario.
All right.
I totally agree with that sentiment. On good days and you're not racing, you should be falling. You should be turning hard enough that you should be falling. So, yes, I agree with that. But in a race scenario, guys just don't fall now. If you fall, you don't have a chance.
You're out.
You don't have a chance.
It's pretty much like pump foil races. If you don't start, you don't have a chance.
Yeah.
Do you pump foil anymore, Dave?
No, I don't. So I think I went the other day just to do that parawing thing and we'd had like a lot of jellyfish around because the wind was really bad. So I avoided the ocean. To me, it's a bit of a novelty now. And I think if I do it, I should say part of the context is it's so hot here that the last thing you want to do is go stand on a dock and get sweaty inland, you know. So it's not that fun. And there's a lot of sharks in the water that I dock start in. So that's the other.
I wouldn't dock start there either.
The water quality is not great either. So I think because I have the boogie and I have the foil drive and I have sup downwind and I have prone, I don't have a lot of incentive to dock start anymore.
Makes sense.
So now that you're so good at downwinding and everything and you don't pump foil anymore, what are you going to do with the 1130 with a big cod foil? Are you still using it?
1130 I actually love as a pump around the surf foil. So I very much I think of this in one way is like you can go foiling to train or you can go foiling to have fun. And I sort of do both now. I go specifically to train now as well. And if I go in a surf setting, I will use the 1130S because it's almost like zone two training, and so it's like going for a run, but you're using the same.
Yeah. It's super boring.
Exactly. And it's sort of like, it's still fun. You can still sort of turn and, you know, you can stay up for 15, 20 minutes. And then I find that I'm the fittest at downwinding when I prone surf like that, surf foil, I should say, when I surf foil like that, and then when I downwind as well, that's when I'm at my fittest. And then what I can do is in the afternoon, I can have a toe boogie sesh. That's what I love. So I can sort of do a morning sesh pumping around and then an afternoon sesh towing or downwinding. And that's my perfect day. If I had double a bingo day. Card for the perfect day, that's what I'd do.
And how do you manage your family and still your job with so much foiling in it? And also the business side of foiling, because there is time that goes behind producing videos.
Yeah, it is a big time crunch. And I think you guys would be familiar with it now, making podcasts, making videos. It is time consuming. My wife doesn't work, which is the secret. It's honestly the secret. Like, because, you know, it just makes everything so much simpler for us. And so I managed to support the whole household. So that means she doesn't have to work. So if I ask to go for a downwinder, she doesn't care. She's like, okay, cool. You know, it's not like she's been at work from 9 to 5 and then now she has to come home and look after the kids and I'm off having a great time. So that's part of it. And what was the other part of the question? I've forgotten. Sorry. The business side.
Yeah.
The business side. The business side is probably the bit that I stress about the most. Like, this whole parroting thing has caused me genuine stress because I've been like, oh, I didn't want to not make people want to get into parawinging or anything like that. And, you know, I had a mixed bag of responses and it does get to me as a creator. I'm not one of those people that can just shut out criticism. I'm not good at that. I care and I wish I didn't care, but I do. So, you know, it's just, I'm on the phone most weeks to Amos or the guys at Code or Josh or Foil Drive. And you've got to stay on top of your relationships in the industry. And you know, look, to be honest, still to this day, the most time consuming thing is trying to respond to people on Instagram. Like, that's really because you want to be respectful that they've taken the time to ask some questions. But they're like, it's like answering emails. It's like a work email. And
yeah.
I sort of look at it that way. Easily. So I sort of sit down and I actually do like sessions of answering people's questions. So I might take a day or two to respond to people, but I always respond pretty much. And if I haven't responded, I'm sorry, whoever I didn't respond to out there. But I generally try to, unless it's just like smiley face. And I'm like, well,
yeah,
thank you. Smiley face.
Is that why you stopped the podcast as well?
I just think I was trying to do too many things. I was sort of trying to compete with Generic. I was like, because I loved their style. Yeah,
cool. Super cool. Yeah.
You know? And I realized that I couldn't do what they do because I'm attached to brands. And so in a way, I couldn't actually do it the way I wanted to. I found myself only chatting to people that I had a brand affiliation with already. And I would love to have a platform where I could criticize any piece of gear. Like, this is my, if I could just have a show and a brand pays, you know, like Marquez, the tech. Yeah, yeah. You know, everyone wants to give their kit to him, but all he does is shit on it. I love that for him. Like,
but he does it in a very elegant way.
Exactly. Yeah. And mine would probably not be elegant, but I would love to be able to do that. But testing gear ruins your foiling. It's so bad for your foiling. And so, because you're like changing gear all the time and you never get to dial into a piece of gear. And I care more about being a good foiler than being a good content creator. Whereas in the beginning, I probably cared more about being a good content creator than being a good foiler. And I think the podcast in particular was just, it affects my time with my wife. Like, I'd be doing this every week and she's inside being like, this guy's out here doing a podcast and he makes nothing from it. What is my husband doing?
That was my wife's question. When are you going to earn money with that?
Yeah.
Like
2027. But, you know, podcasting is a great format to earn money because, and just to meet people, obviously. So I think it's a better format to grow your brands than YouTube is personally, because they see your personality. Yeah. And you make connections and then they'll be like, yeah, I'll send you a foil. And you're like, sweet, free foil. So
yeah. Trying to put stickers everywhere we can.
All right. I like it. That looks like a condom.
Maybe we should.
That's right.
If 10 people like this, then we might do some condoms like that.
And I'm curious about your life in Australia. First of all, for the listeners, whereabouts are you living in Australia?
So Sunshine Coast. So Noosa is what people would describe it as, but we're nowhere near Noosa. Noosa is about 40 minutes away. But yeah, north of Brisbane. So we're an hour north of Brisbane. So pretty much if you draw, like, you got Australia and you drew a line through the middle, we're in the middle on the East Coast.
All right.
So it's hard for you to get to. Do you get to Europe sometimes?
No, well, yeah, I will be this month. That is by far my first ever trip to Europe. And I think
it's Barcelona foiling thing.
Yeah. So that's 14 hours then layovers. So it's like 30 hours of travel just to get there. It's pretty full on.
When is that going to be?
I don't know, actually. End of the month. Month after? First week of next month? I don't know. So at some point.
Do you still do you still have time to spearfish or completely forgot?
So I stopped spearfishing entirely. Long story short, had too many friends die, which is why foiling's the best, because I haven't had any friends die yet. But just shallow water blackout, it's a legit problem. Guys diving on their own. And
why did they die?
So you essentially, you run out of oxygen, but you don't realize that you run out of oxygen. That's sort of that's what they call a shallow water blackout, because as you're coming back up, it's usually where it happens, in the like top 5 to 10 meters of the water column. And it's usually the dives that you feel great on. There's actually like a euphoria that people get before they black out. They feel great. They're like, oh, that was amazing. What a beautiful dive. Look at this ocean. And you forget the urge to breathe. And yeah, you just pass out and then you just sink back down. And unless your friend is there ready at the surface, people die. Like it's happened fairly often in the last 5 years. But I also used to get hectic seasickness. Hectic. But I just can't do anything in like half measures. So we were trying to, we were diving 30 meters and we'd dive that all day. And then I'd have these really bad headaches, seasickness. It'd take me days to recover. I didn't enjoy it. Like, I love it, but I didn't enjoy it. So foiling's way better.
Yeah,
you can breathe. But you said you're getting bored of it.
No, not getting bored. I'm getting fussy.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, I'll use this example. Imagine you made steak every single day. Steak is fantastic. Are you guys vegetarians? I should check. You're not vegan or vegetarian?
No, go ahead, please.
Okay. Just so I check. You make steak every single day. At some day, you're going to want some chimichurri. You want to judge it up a bit. And I've had a little too much chimichurri. I've had too many great days of great foiling, and I have so many options that sometimes options kills your drive to go. So I still remember when I lived in Tasmania, and the surf there is like quite good, but you have to travel like an hour and a half to get to the waves, which is a lot of like Europeans have that sort of setup. It's a long way to go. But any day I had off, I would go. It didn't matter what the waves were, I would just go. And now, because I don't work as much, the beach is 5 minutes away. I have a tow boogie. You just get lazy. So
it's good that you have something like the Parawing that you still get to experience some frustration.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm
happy for you.
Yeah. It's like your maximum levels of enjoyment is where you're getting better at something and it's not too much that you can't overcome. That's sort of where I think men especially, that's where we really sort of come alive. And I love the idea of the Parawing, and I keep going back to it, even though I said to my wife the other day, I was like, I'm throwing this thing in the bin. And then yesterday I tried again and it was only 12 knots and I couldn't get it up. But anyway, I still tried. It is the wind, and that's just, that's outside of my control. But I'm trying to work on, like, for I say prone falling. I've probably stagnated a bit in my prone falling the last 6 months. So now I'm like, I got to do airs. That's why I put up that meme today. I was like, I've got to start hurting myself because everyone's trying to do airs now. I was like, like I just figured out the making turns look good. Now everybody's, you know, another 5 kilometers down the road. So I'm always trying to make sure that I remind myself to go back to things. And like, I'm going to try and tick off riding switch this year because I can't ride switch, which is ironic because I used to be a wakeboarder and I rode better switch than I did regular, even though I'm a regular rider, because I rode at Cable Park so much and they all go.
It depends so much what you're used to. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm a regular snowboarder, but I started goofy pump foiling and now I can't even pump foil regular.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
That's super weird.
It is, but I tried to start regular, doesn't work at all. And like doing a switch while riding, sometimes I can pump 2 or 3 times, but then I fall. So yeah, I really have to do that. Terrible.
That's crazy. Find when I try and do the switch foot thing, I taco. And that's like the worst, you know, it's the worst way to fall on a foil. And I don't know what it is. I just always taco.
So dangerous.
I'm a bit afraid of it.
So you said you had a race planned. What else do you have coming next couple of months?
So Hawaii is the big one. So I feel like I'm not really up to my fitness at this point. Last year leading to Hawaii was as good as it's ever been. And that was partly just because we had so many windy days for some reason. And we haven't had that this year. It's been really bad wind. And other than like surf foiling, I'm just not getting as much time on foil. Like we were doing 30 kilometers almost every day. Like in the lead up to Hawaii, it was amazing. And you just get a particular type of fitness that was so conducive to racing. But I'm really trying to, I want to get into some sort of surf comp. There's one happening in May in down near Sydney, but I can't go to that because of work. So that's sort of like on my bucket list. I want to try and give Jeremy Wilmot a bit of a run for his money because we have a bit of a rivalry, the heavy boys. And because I beat him at that the foil drive race, I want to now try and beat him in a surf comp, which is no easy feat. Like Jeremy's amazing. But it's just, you know, you got to make these arbitrary goals just for the fun of it. And then what else is on? I got to figure out how to parawing. That's the other thing. I don't know.
Do you use the parawing on like a skateboard sometimes? Like a surf skate or something?
We did like a mountain board on the beach.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know. I didn't find it that beneficial. But who knows? It's just we have no wind.
Yeah. So if there's no wind, the parawing doesn't work. It's just what it is.
I feel like I'm not learning anything unless there's wind. So I'm really trying to discipline myself. Unless it's 15 knots, do not go out.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yesterday I went out and it wasn't 15 knots. So, yes.
And did any cross training to get in better shape for races?
Yeah, I'm doing more and more cross training. So I think this is part of the reason I'm foiling less too. Is foiling has diminishing returns at some point. You don't get much benefit.
Because you become so efficient that.
Yeah. And so like we did a downwind run the other day and I was in like blue heart zone. So like 110 beats per minute the whole time. And I was having a great time. I was surfing. And so if you're surfing, you're not really using much energy unless you're racing. So, and I don't always want to race. Racing's boring. You just go on a straight line. So I've started running. So I'm doing like 7K runs and like a lot of zone 2 type stuff. And then I've added weight training and I'm trying to add like some powerlifting and you know, some just aesthetic stuff. You want biceps. It's nice to have biceps. That's the only reason men go to the gym is for biceps. And I've taken that out of Edo's book because there was an interview with Edo after M2O last year and he spoke about how he only would go for 30-minute downwind runs and then everything else he was doing was pretty much training off the water. So he was doing hill sprints and runs and weightlifting. And I think you...
It's so boring. That's terrible. That's just not fun. If you want to do it to be the best, then yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And I'm never going to be the best, but I want to push myself. I've sort of hit a ceiling and I don't know how to get over it.
Yeah, like okay.
On a good day, I'm fast. On a average day, I'm average. And I'm up against guys who have been athletes their entire lives. So like my friend, and I talk about him often, but he's a great example. Alex Tibby, he's been like Nutrigrain athletes, beach running, and they do all the surf ski stuff. He was like an elite. He was a pro at that. Then he was in the SAS. So he's just like a career fitness freak. And then he comes into downwinding. So it's no problem for him to push nonstop for 45 minutes, in 15 kilometers, up and over, up and over, up and over, up and over. That's nothing to him. Whereas for me, I had to work up to that. And I'm a better foiler than him, but he's so much fitter than me that he can compensate for not being as good a foiler, quote unquote. So being a fast downwinder is totally different. Whereas if we went on like a surf downwind comp, I'm going to win. But in a race, he wins every time. And I would love to shorten that gap, but it's not easy and it won't happen, but that's okay.
You should try my opinion, CrossFit or this kind of functional training where you really push for like anything between 20 to 60 minutes. And that's, in my opinion, very much more similar to the kind of races that you are potentially maybe going to compete in.
Yeah, I can't really get into the CrossFit thing. I just, I want my shoulders to stay intact, because they do that.
I was the same. And then I was absolutely surprised when I actually got into it. I was a gym rat and I had to rewrite my beliefs.
How do you go after a sore leg day, then trying to pump foil or something?
Say again, sorry.
So if you want to pump foil and you've had a big leg session the day before at the gym, it obviously affects you. How do you find that?
So first of all, I walk to the beach and this already makes it better because you're less stiff. And then the first 10 minutes are a nightmare and then you just, the legs warm up and you just don't remember it anymore.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right.
Yeah. All right. I think that we can wrap it up. Is there anything else?
An hour on the dot. You guys are amazing.
Well, thanks to you. Is there anything, Dave, you want to tell the community? Do you want to tell our listeners where they can find you, for example? Your Insta handle, your YouTube.
Dave West Foils, Dave_West_Foils on Instagram for the boring shit. That's the, 20-second version of a whole story. And then YouTube, I don't even know what it is. So just look up Dave West Foils and you'll find something.
You'll find him.
And keep an eye out for the Parawing update because I don't want people to think I hate Parawing forever. So that's it.
That's a perfect place to stop. All that's left for me is tell you what the next episode is going to be. And it's going to be with three guys who had the first, the president of the first pump foil club in Switzerland, in Poncier, which is a little lake, brownish lake. And like a couple of years ago, they built the pump foil club.
It's going to be completely the opposite of what we had now.
Yes.
Sharks.
Also, the water was not very nice. Water quality didn't look too good, but no sharks there. I can vouch for that. No, I was before. I shouldn't have gone there, but it's fine. All right, Dave. Thank you very much
for coming on the show.
And look forward to hearing about your Parawing continuation.
Hopefully, see you guys in Europe one day. Hopefully.
Awesome. Hopefully.
Cool. Bye. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.